you very much. So my name's Andrew Hogue, and I just wanted to thank everyone who's sort of part of this larger project. This is just going to be a small piece of a preliminary study that we've been looking at, trying to sort of quantify how stereoscopic 3D affects player experience and their engagement. Sorry about that. All right, so a lot of the work that I'm going to be talking about is sort of mostly done by our students, Chris and Mina and Brody, on the board there. this happens every time. All right, so a little bit about me first. I just wanted to sort of talk a little bit about sort of why I got into this area. I did my master's in computer science at York University in the Center for Vision Research. And over there, we had a lot of experience, a lot of fun building a cave. So I had a lot of experience actually as a master's student sawing metal and putting together the engineering side of things. And I also helped build a head tracking system for cave environments. So it was really interesting, and it was really different sort of involvement into stereoscopic viewing. And this opened up the world to me. And then I went on to do my PhD, where I looked at a totally different side of stereoscopic content creation. So I was looking at sort of underwater robotics and using stereo cameras underwater to create 3D models of the world and sort of more on the content side of things and then visualizing it afterwards in cave-like environments, et cetera. And now I'm at a game development program where we teach people how to build video games and how to design video games. And so I've started a project where we wanted to look at how stereoscopic information, how stereoscopic viewing affects video game design, and how we can enhance video game design if we understand a little bit more about how stereo affects the user. And so that's why we started a project called iGo3D, where basically our goals are to help try and collate a lot of information that's been done in the literature in the past and try and understand how stereoscopic 3D can enhance video games and sort of what are the constraints on the player and the player experience. We want to be able to create guidelines and suggestions with perceptual thresholds and thresholds of parameters, et cetera, so that we can make this publicly available to independent developers who we believe are going to push the medium forward if they take it wholeheartedly. But we also understand that independent developers don't necessarily have large research budgets, so that's why we are trying to do this and trying to look at sort of all the research that's been done in the past at SDNA type of conferences, VR conferences, et cetera, and try and make sure that we validate them for current technology as well as current game design methodologies. A little word on our partners. We wanted to thank Ontario Media Development Corporation, Ontario Centers of Excellence for their grateful funding opportunities to help outfit our labs and pay for our students, et cetera. But our academic partners are University of Waterloo in the Fine Arts Department, where we're looking at multimodality and audio-visual interaction in stereoscopic 3D games. York University Center for Vision Research, Rob Allison's there. And he's looking at sort of a comfort and perception in stereoscopic 3D. University of Western Ontario looking at latency in multiplayer games and how that affects our stereoscopic perception and comfort in 3D games. Ontario College of Art and Design looking at new holography displays. And our industry partners, Digital Extremes, Bedlam Games, Big Blue Bubble, EA, VFX Junction, Interactive Ontario, these are our formal partners, but we've been talking with Ian and Simon from Sony recently as well to try and make sure that we have the most latest information as well. So just a few things. Stereoscopic 3D, as you all know, is certainly not new, but it's certainly not new in video games. There was obviously a not-so-successful attempt by Nintendo in the past with the Virtual Boy. And that just sort of said that the technology wasn't quite ready yet, I think. A lot of people experienced headaches, and people didn't really know how to design video games for stereoscopic 3D at the time as well. And there's subsequently been a lot of research in the military and VR industries to sort of try and understand how these things are affecting people. And large-scale displays is sort of really important these days because we're starting to see the technology for things like the cave and the holodeck actually start to make it into our homes at a fairly reasonable cost. Things like larger 3D TVs are becoming commonplace and relatively inexpensive. but also things like the Sony Move and the Microsoft Kinect, et cetera, are allowing us different modes of interaction with these type of environments. So it behooves us to sort of look at what's been done in the VR industries as game developers and sort of understand what has been learned, does it still apply, and how do we actually affect that for commercial applications. The technology is obviously here. I like to say the future is here. It is now a content problem. The technology exists, but now we have to understand how to actually develop content appropriately. So there's obviously a lot of interest in stereoscopic video games. Sony is pushing this a lot. So there's a lot of Sony PlayStation 3D games out there. Wikipedia, this was back in the summer, this number was about 42, but it's probably around 50 or so now, I'm assuming. But there's certainly a lot of interest by other people like Nintendo with autostereoscopic displays, et cetera, which is very interesting to try and make sure that people are trying to get the best type of content and the best type of player experience. The question is, what makes stereoscopic 3D interesting? We know a lot from the film industry and a lot of the techniques that have been developed for the film industry, but do they actually translate into the video game sphere? There is a significant difference between films and video games, and that's, things are not pre-rendered, things are, and you want to have the user in the feedback loop as well, so it's a very interactive medium. From a technology perspective, similar to what Ian was saying in the last presentation, is that a lot of these things are relatively understood by researchers. You know, we know how to render two views, we have some tricks to make sure that these things are generated efficiently. So the technology perspective is that it's now industry related, it's not really on a research side of things. We understand how to actually, all the little tricks and techniques to actually create really interesting views. And the HCI research has been doing a heck of a lot of research into task performance and analysis and performance of errors. But everyone's sort of sidestepping one major problem from my perspective is that what exactly makes these things fun, and does stereoscopic enhance the funness factor? Because at the end of the day, we want games to sort of be interesting and fun and enhance this player experience. So what are those parameters that actually change that? And that's what we want to try and look at. So how do we actually define user experience is sort of what we're trying to accomplish here, trying to create a model of user experience from the player's perspective to try and understand how we can create novel game mechanics, maybe interaction along the depth axis. Is that important for gamers? Is that important for actually increasing and making a better experience? Can we take stereoscopic illusions that we've understood in the past and actually enhance this for maybe puzzle games, et cetera? So these are things that we want to try and address and try and ask. From our model, this is sort of a model that I'm kind of following. I like to follow the typical game design methodology when I think about developing a game. A lot of game designers like to think of mechanics, dynamics, and aesthetics framework from Marc LeBlanc. And essentially, if you split these things up into three different categories, here are some, this is certainly not comprehensive, this is certainly some of the factors that are affecting user experience. We have the technology side of things, I consider that the mechanical nature. We have the aesthetic side, which is more of the design side, visual feedback, auditory quality, visual quality, et cetera. But then we also have in the middle thing, the important part that ties it together is the dynamics, the human factors. These are the things that are affected by us, the player. The player is sort of in an integral part into the system here, and we have to understand these particular aspects of it in order to create better content. There's been a lot of work in HCI looking at sort of the mechanical nature and how we interact with the system in terms of the mechanical side of things, so speeds and accuracies and latencies. And there was a really good paper last year at CHI from La Viola that looked at basically, they did a study where they looked at playing a few different games in 3D and in 2D, and they evaluated the performance and the errors, and they didn't really find a significant difference between the two. However, they did report a lot of anecdotal evidence of saying that the players enjoyed the 3D side more, but they didn't really have anything to back that up because they weren't measuring that. That was just sort of freeform. So that's sort of where we come in, and we want to basically look at the engagement and experience side of things, trying to understand how stereoscopic 3D affects the immersion, the presence, the absorption, the flow of the player into the game content. And there's been some work in the past sort of looking at non-3D games, but mostly just trying to quantify this effect in the past. A lot of people are using questionnaires that ask particular questions, such as Brockmeyer and Eiselstein, and then Nakei, who's more physiological, looking at brainwave patterns and heart rates and other physiological indicators. So the question we wanted to address in a pilot study was, does stereoscopic 3D actually increase or decrease the player engagement in the content? Is it important to the player? That sort of thing. Measuring these things, like I said, it could be a variety of self-reported measures or physiological measures. We chose the self-reporting measure from Brockmeyer, which is essentially a game engagement questionnaire. And it was the one that we found to have the most sort of evidence as a valid tool to measure these sorts of things. So we looked at a variety of other questionnaires and a variety of other tools, but this one sort of seemed to have the most statistical validation and published results. So it's basically a 19-question self-reported measure. We did the study where we had 20 volunteers, all game development students, so there might be a little bias there, but at the end of the day, those are your customers. So we want to know if we affect them as well. We decided to play Trine. We chose Trine, not Trine 2, but the first version of Trine, because it was actually a very, it provides a really interesting experience, and we wanted to make sure that the S3D side of things was sort of orthogonal to the gameplay. We wanted to see if adding S3D to an existing game that wasn't necessarily designed for 3D and doesn't necessarily interact in stereoscopic depth axes actually has an effect on the player engagement. So we had two counterbalance conditions. We had these players play stereoscopic in stereoscopic condition and also in a 2D condition. They played each condition for 30 minutes each. At the end of each condition, they filled out the game engagement questionnaire, and we had a little break in between. Obviously, we randomized and counterbalanced the two conditions. Just some details. We used the DDD driver and the same fixed settings per player. We wanted to remove most of the variables. They sat in a typical standard PC gaming environment where they sat at a desk and played with a mouse and keyboard. It was using a Zalman Trimon 27-inch monitor. It's a passive interlaced display. And the 2D was also rendered in 3D, but with zero parallax or at the zero parallax plane, so it's in screen space. So we wanted to remove all the any sort of rendering pipeline changes, et cetera. So there was basically going through the same rendering pipeline for both conditions. And what we found was kind of encouraging. Basically, there is a slight significant difference between the two conditions, which suggests that players experience a greater sense of engagement when playing in stereoscopic 3D as compared to the 2D condition. So that was actually kind of encouraging. But what it actually means for developers, well, I'll get to that in a minute. And also, the freeform comments were kind of interesting as well. Afterwards, they were just asked to talk about their experience. And they said that here's a few that interested me. I thought the 3D was more fun, but I was so immersed, I missed some important pop-ups, such as when the characters leveled up, which indicates that we really have to think about the HUD design when we're thinking about developing a stereoscopic 3D, that it's at the same location or relative locations that we're actually focusing on. Other indications was 3D was definitely better. The feeling of depth made a huge difference. If I had a 3D TV, I would invest in 3D games, so that's encouraging as well. And also, the last one is sort of a negative one, but it's kind of interesting as well. Both sessions were fun. However, it was much harder for me to play the 3D one of the two because my eyes were not able to focus clearly. As a result, many of the things that were supposed to be appearing to pop out of the screen ended up appearing as two images. This also caused me to get a headache. While playing the 2D version, I felt more immersed into the experience, but that may be simply because I wasn't focused on trying to see the game properly. So this does indicate that even that there were certainly a per-user calibration effect that we have to take into account, but the fact that we do get an effect is even in the presence of fixed calibration settings is also encouraging. So now we know then from a designer perspective, what does this mean? This means that if you just build a game and then say, okay, just 3D, don't even have to worry about it, there is some small effect for free. We do have players slightly more engaged in video games, at least that's how I interpret this. The question now is, now that this we can use this as a baseline for future studies, how do we actually enhance this effect? Can we separate these two settings, these two conditions a little bit more by varying different parameters, stereoscopic parameters, varying the type of interactions? How does that actually affect the engagement in the gameplay? And does that translate, does engagement actually translate to fun? That's also something that we have to think about. Things that we need to do, can we exploit illusions? Can we interact along the depth axis? These are things that I'm looking at in the future. So if you have if you want any more information, please feel free to send me an email, and I'd love to answer any questions that you have.
Okay. Do we have any questions for Andrew? Yes. Go ahead.
Which one?
That man right there.
We did a similar study with 60 participants playing three different games, and we're going to present these results at CHI this year.
Oh, cool.
And one of the games was also Trine.
Oh, yeah.
And we also tested a racing game and a 3D shooter. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have real good results with Trine, actually. And we had better results with Blur, which is a racing game, and with Avatar, which is a 3D shooter. And we had strong gender effects.
Oh, yeah.
We had much more effects with male persons than with female, which also may relate to the chosen games. So in our perspective, we think that it really depends on the type of the game and the target group to achieve a certain effect out of stereoscopy in games. Can you say something about
that? Yeah, no, absolutely. And our population was fairly small in that sense as well. And we were certainly kind of biased towards the male population. We had maybe one or two female players just because it was very difficult to persuade them to come play these video games. And we have very few female participants in our game development program to begin with, so it's kind of hard to do. But I totally agree with you, and I'd love to read your paper at the end of the day. Love to chat afterwards.
Okay, Ray.
Yeah, the comment of the one participant who got a headache prompts me to ask you, have any of your subjects doing the test, did you pre-screen any of them for eye conditions, for stereo acuity or strabismus?
We didn't really do any official thing, but we didn't do any visual acuity tests or anything, but they were able to see 3D with stereograms. So
you did do some kind of stereo test, right, prior to the
study. They could all see stereo for sure.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So yes, Mike. Sorry.
A quick comment, quick question. You said you kept the stereo parameters the same for each game because you didn't want to introduce any differences, but in fact, it would be better if you tuned it for each person. For example, IPD is different, and you may want to adjust for that. That's just a comment.
No, absolutely. That's the next thing that we wanted to do, actually, is sort of looking at the different types of calibration. Because we've noticed that developers are still using the single slider kind of mode for the amount of depth coming out of the screen. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to look at later on is sort of, is that effective? Do players actually know what that means? Does it tune it appropriately in different scenarios? We're also looking at sort of in-game kind of transient effects, like, you know, if they play a game to change these parameters, does it help them?
Yes, and then just a quick question. Your iGo 3D.
Yep.
What is that?
Yeah, it's a silly acronym that stands for Interactive Games Ontario 3D.
So it's a program, it's the name of your program.
Yeah, it's a project.
Your project.
All right, let's thank Andrew.